It's Adam Shartoff, your host of FilmWax Radio. It is Wednesday, January 9th, 2019, and this is episode 532 of the podcast. I welcome you. Life of the Podcaster, episode 412. So, let's see. This goes back to a podcast I did with a couple of Columbia film professors a few months back, Jack Lechner and Rob King. One of the reasons I was going up there is because I went up there to talk to them about a retrospective of films they were programming and about to present in honor of Ira Deutschman, who has also been on this podcast. So they were doing this whole retrospective of Ira, the films that Ira's either produced or had some influence over, and it was this big, very elaborate, multi-decade retrospective. So I went to this thing, and one of the films they showed was A Chilly Scene of Winter, which was, back from the, I guess, the early 80s or what have you. Anyway, so among the panel of people that showed up for the screening and for that were available during the Q&A was, of course, my friend, the great Mark Metcalf, Griffin Dunn, who's done this podcast a couple of times. Unfortunately, Joan Micklin-Silver, who directed it, could not be available for that evening. But also present was actor Peter Riegert. You know, Peter Riegert is somebody who I've wanted on the show. I've had Griffin Dunn on a couple of times, and I was going to ask Joan on, but Joan wasn't, as I mentioned, she wasn't there. So, by the way, if you're listening and you have contact information for Joan Micklin-Silver, I do want to invite her on. Anyhow, so Peter Riegert was sitting there, and I went up after the Q&A was over. I walked down to the floor, and I introduced myself, and I said, hey, would you be interested in doing my podcast? And he said, sure. I mean, I told him almost everybody else around, standing around here, has been on. Griffin Dunn has been on, and the guy who was moderating it, Jack Lechner, and Rob King, and Ira Deutschman himself had all done my podcast. And so I thought that it should be pretty smooth, and in fact, it was smooth. He immediately responded, and he took my information, and we ended up contacting each other, and it got done. And so what you're going to hear is that conversation, which I did a couple of months ago. We talked about lots of stuff. It's fun to bring on these actors who've been around for decades because they have so many great anecdotes and so much to share, so I think you're really going to enjoy it. Peter Riegert's first feature film was Animal House 40 years ago, or now 41 years ago, and he played Boone, or Donald Schoenstein. And then he went on to do a film called Americathon. We're going to talk about all this. Then Chilly Scenes of Winter in 1979. So I was wrong when I said 1980, early 80s. It's actually 1979. Local Hero is a big deal. We talk a lot about that. That came out in 1983. And he's acting opposite Burt Lancaster. It's kind of a big deal. But that's a great movie for a lot of people. If you haven't seen Local Hero, find out where you can see it and do catch up with that film. It's just going to warm the cockles, as Woody Allen said. Great, that's all I needed, hot cockles. Anyhow, Peter Riegert was in that. What else did he do? Crossing the Delancey, a classic, only a few years later with Amy Irving. That was in 1988. What else? Oh, he would go on to direct a film. And we also spent a great deal of time talking about his directorial effort, which was just one film. It's called King of the Corner, and it's a notable film. You can see that. I think it's on YouTube, in fact. And he stars in it as well as Jake Hoffman, who plays his younger cohort in the company he works at, and who's ambitious and trying to basically get ahead and maneuver himself. Jake Hoffman was on this podcast, and he happens to be Dustin Hoffman's son. The film also stars Eli Wallach, Rita Moreno, Harris Yulin, who's been on the show, Isabella Rossellini, and Dominic Chinese. and Beverly D'Angelo. What an incredible cast. Anyway, so we talked about that film as well. More recently, though, Peter has been on multiple episodes of The Sopranos, and he was regular in the show Damages and The Good Wife. And now he's a regular, or at least he has been, on The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. So this is a very, very busy working actor and really respected and beloved because he's always working. And he couldn't have been nicer. He couldn't have been kinder. And he gave me a lot of his time. I don't know what else to say. This is a very special episode. I'm very, very excited to present a conversation with the wonderful actor, And I hope maybe he'll consider coming back on because I know we just barely tapped into all the great stories that he has. This, my friends, is Peter Riegert on Filmwax Radio.
What are you doing here?
I was invited.
He came to clean the windows.
By invitation.
He did a nice job. You did a nice job.
Well, thanks for lunch.
I did not set that up. You gotta believe me.
Why? You've done it before.
I know.
But someone who doesn't want to see someone, you're seeing an awful lot of me.
Look, I'm sorry if I've seemed ambivalent, confused.
I know what ambivalent means.
Sorry.
Stop being so sorry.
Bubby, close the door. I heard you and Marilyn had a good time.
Yeah.
There's a little reception Saturday night at the bookstore. I thought maybe you two would like to...
Going to a baseball game Saturday.
Oh. Maybe I could be handling this better.
Handling what? What are you handling, me?
I don't blame you for being
You come
annoyed.
To my stand, you invite me out to dinner, you set me up with your girlfriend, you get your bubby to drag me over here, a guy could get a little tired of this routine.
I did not...
What's the problem here? You think it's so small, my world? You think it's so provincial? You think it defines me? Is that it?
No. No, I don't. I feel like I keep apologizing to you, like I can't get it right. Sam, I want to get it right.
Okay, I'm ready.
Great. I was gonna try to watch. I was trying to fit in some time so to rewatch Chilly Scenes again, or
parts of it.
I got there. Really, I just came for the Q&A when I saw when I met you.
Oh, okay.
I had been there because I was running. From something, and I wanted to, because I was actually wanting to meet Joe.
Are we?
Oh, we are. I'm sorry.
Okay,
that's my kind of thing.
Sure.
I just hit the ground running. I actually was there to meet Joan. I wanted to meet Joan Micklin Silver.
Right. She couldn't make it.
Right. She was, and it's a number of times where twice on two occasions
right.
where I wanted to go to a Q&A or a screening and meet her because I wanted to ambush her essentially and ask her to do my podcast. Kind of maniac I am, but and both times she canceled on her appearance, so I hope she's okay. I hope she's all right.
I guess it's not that easy to get around anymore, because usually I saw her at I can't remember if it was an anniversary screening down at Film Forum.
And that was the one, or was it Quad? Was it the Film Forum or the Quad?
No, remember? Film Forum.
It was? Okay.
Yeah.
Here we
Thanks,
go.
Ron.
Let's see if this works. Can you hear?
That's good.
Can you hear?
Yeah, that's good.
I can turn up the volume a little bit in the
headphones. That's good.
Okay.
As long as I can hear my voice.
Yeah, that actually works pretty well.
Yeah.
This is a good recorder, by the way. Another thing you should know about,
Need
to know. I mean,
It depends. Like a lot, obviously, if you're over, I don't know, how did things run at the Nutmeg Post where you did Gilbert Gottfried's podcast? Did they have a more permanent setup?
Yeah, so it's a studio. But this is just as fine if the sound works.
No, it sounds studio quality.
Yeah. You this know, particular just, machine.
Yeah, it's like there's no sound, there's no white noise, no.
Right.
Whereas an earlier version I used to use of this.
Well, the good thing is you can travel. You know, you can move to the person or like what you did for me. So that's great.
Yeah, exactly. I have more flexibility. And I think, you know, because I'm not Gilbert Gottfried, I don't really have that, you know.
Well, I don't know if he always had it, but the space was kind of nice. But I think they've moved again.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think you're right. Yeah. I think they mentioned something about that, that was, space was.
Yeah.
Is that me?
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. This is great. Thank you for just, you know, kind of having faith and doing something like this.
It's always fun to talk about movies with people who like movies. So
that's good.
Plus, I'm curious just about the phenomena of a podcast.
Right.
It intrigues me. I haven't heard a lot of them. I've heard some. Uh-huh. But what I'm finding interesting, it's like having whatever your fancy is, whoever you want to talk to.
Right.
You know, that's the idea for this screenplay that I'm doing. This character basically likes talking to people. And he's an actor, so he's in one of those positions. He's like me. He's older, so the work is less and the competition is greater. So but he's curious. And as an actor, you're always studying anyway. Whether it's background or something related to the work,
mm-hmm.
I don't mean backstory or any stuff like that. It's just the natural, at least for me, it fills a natural curiosity.
Right.
Structurally, I'm less interested in a person's history. I'm pretty much, you know, whatever is written, that's what I've trained myself to do. Some actors have a totally different point of view. They've got to know how they brush their teeth. To me, it's much more, it's just trusting the writing more.
I understand. Right. Technique, we're talking.
Kind of a different approach.
Yeah.
It is technique, but everybody's different. I mean, there's every acting school has a different point of view.
Yeah. Well, I was reminded of, because I was listening to your show, doing Gilbert's show, and then I also watched the film you directed. I'm jumping ahead, but I guess I'm not jumping ahead. We can go whatever
order. Back and forth.
Yeah. You directed a feature film called King of the Corner,
right,
which I was surprised that I hadn't seen it already.
Well, it didn't really get a release. I mean, I gave it a release. It was an independent film, as you know. I think it cost $400,000. We shot it in 20 days. And it was based on two short stories written by a wonderful writer named Jerry Shapiro, who I met in...
An Italian guy that you...
I met him in 2000. Was it 2000? I think so, yeah. I had taken a short film that I had directed by Courier, which is an O. Henry short story that I adapted. Anyway, while I was in... Telluride, a fellow named Danny Lately, who runs the independent movie theater that's part of the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, introduced himself and said, would you come to Lincoln with your short? Because he really liked that. I said, oh my God, absolutely. And so I went to Lincoln, and while I was there, they were very sweet. They showed Local Hero. They showed the short. They gave me, you know, they treated me like I was Marlon Brando. It was hysterical. But very nice people. And then when they put me up in some probably guest faculty or maybe the president's residence. It was really nice.
Yeah.
And there was an envelope with a letter and the book. And the letter was from Jerry Shapiro, who said, I'm sorry, I can't be there to meet you. I'm
was
a
he
big
on the faculty?
Fan.
This guy was
he is on the faculty.
I see.
And he wrote and said, in New York City with my wife, Judy, and we're seeing a Tom Stoppard play.
Mm-hmm.
because they loved the theater. And then he was coming back, and I was going to miss him. So he wrote me this beautiful letter. And he said, I teach an American Jewish literature course here at the university. And as you can imagine, most of the students are Lutherans, but it's a very popular
interesting
class. Well, it's, you know, Malamud, you're in the middle of nowhere. It's not a very big Jewish population.
Like Malamud.
Yeah, everybody.
All those guys.
Everybody.
From that, like.
So he used to begin the semester with, I think I did a reading of a Shalom Aleichem short story. Mm-hmm. It could have been another Yiddish writer. I can't remember. Anyway, he began the class that way, and he ended it showing Crossing Delancey. And mm-hmm. the way the letter was just a beautiful introduction, and he said, I'm leaving you a copy of my book, mm-hmm. which I think we might share a similar sense of humor. And the book was called Bad Jews and Other Stories, and I just fell on the floor laughing. I read it on the way back to Los Angeles where I was doing a TV show. And I called him the next day and said, I'd like to option your book. Would you be interested in working on a screenplay with me? And he said he never had, mm-hmm. but I said, well, we'll do it together. And long story short, we did the movie. Mm-hmm. I think it took 2 more years to get it done. And then I cold called theaters and booked it for 3 months. Wow. And then an independent company picked it up. I'm forgetting their name right now. Mark Cuban runs their company. Mm-hmm. You'd know it in a second. And they picked it up for the last 4 months.
Okay.
So I went around the country, went to 27 cities, and I did Q&As on every Friday and every Saturday.
For like six months.
For 27 weeks.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It turned out to seven or 8 months.
Wow. I wonder if you could even do that like that now.
Oh, sure.
Well, I mean, a variation on that.
Landmark Theaters.
Oh, right. They were the ones. Right, of course. I always forget. He owns those. Yeah. And there's one over here. They just opened up on the west side not too long ago on West 57th Street, actually.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not so easy to... you can't get the reviews like you did 12 years ago.
Well,
It
came out in 2000.
You hired a publicist.
Yeah, I hired a publicist. Mm-hmm. And she would set me up in each town. Mm-hmm. And I would get in on a Wednesday. I would get in on a Wednesday. I would do publicity Thursday and Friday. And then the first screening, whenever that was, on a Friday. And then, you know, it was 4 Q&As.
Hey.
It was 4 Q&As on Friday and 5 on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I would do press. I would do television and radio. And some were better than others.
Sorry, I'm up here.
That's all right.
I'm in the middle of an important... Do you have batteries? I'm now nervous I'm running out. And I'm gonna be really unprofessional. I'll leave them with you, so I barely need them. That looks like good pizza, huh?
I have to take a bite.
See if it looks like it's whole wheat or something.
That's why I did your podcast.
I have so many filmmakers on though who have done this, so you know.
I mean, done
DIY, and well, everybody does that, right?
Yeah.
Not everybody. Some people can't afford to get the publicist. They've run out of money. And they, you know, they can barely get their film out into a handful of theaters. So they've spent all the money they have.
Well, I called...
or money they don't have.
Right.
In some cases.
The first person I called, because I knew it wouldn't be that easy to get bookings, but I thought, you know, with the cast that I have, I mean, it was Isabella Rossellini and Eli Wallach, Eric Bogosian, Dominic Chianese, Beverly D'Angelo, Rita Moreno. I had the
anybody
names.
Known? And then you also had, I should mention one other person in it, because actually two people in it, and it's funny you didn't mention them because they're the two that have done my podcast. You didn't mention two actors that are in there. One the youngest member of your cast, and one is probably the oldest, if not Dominic. Do you have any more than that? This takes 4. I'll leave them with you.
No, I don't know.
I'm sorry. I'm just like, this thing takes 4. No, I had on Harris Yulin, who
I love Harris.
Love. And I, you know, he's a theater guy too, of course. And
Did he do your podcast?
Yeah, yeah. But it was not one on one.
He did
an independent film, like, you know, I guess is the thing that people like, as you say, because they're not getting as much Hollywood work.
Right.
Anyway,
I was working. I wasn't doing. Oh, you mean?
I'm just talking about him. He's significantly older.
Yeah, but he works. Oh my God, he just finished the show. I just saw him on.
He finished what?
Paris did a show.
A TV show?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think it was called...
Now that there's so much TV, you're right. I mean, probably now everybody's getting work. They may not be making what they once
it's
were.
It's not as much as you think. Uh-huh. I mean, there's only so... All you got to do is turn on a television and go to a movie. There aren't any people of any age in their 60s, 70s, 80s. You know, they just... There's one.
Okay. But there's... No, I mean, a lot of series, though, you know, there's the kind of like recurring grandparent characters. You're right, though. They're not getting...
Yeah, but they're all... You know, that's network.
Okay.
And those are terrible.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
I mean, basically, they're, you know, erectile dysfunction jokes and shit jokes.
I know.
And, you
know, it's really insulting, right?
Totally.
It
makes a cliche seem straightforward.
Yeah.
The concept of what an older person is it almost doesn't seem to exist.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 71. I don't walk around going, oh my God, I can't, I don't know how to function.
Yeah.
I mean, that day may come, but not everybody, it's just so lacking in imagination.
You know, there's another version of that also, even on a broader scale, which is men. Men, just men, are in sitcoms, especially network sitcoms.
Sitcoms, they're the stupidest people on the planet.
They're always idiots, and they're emasculated. I made a comment about it because I was in the subway. I was walking down the lobby, the corridor at the subway, and, you know, they have the posters, and one was with this the guy. It was canceled, and then another network, Tim Allen.
Oh, but Tim, Tim Allen.
Well, he had a hugest show in the world. But he has his new one. Now, the image of the two, I forget, a famous actor plays his wife. Beautiful lady. She's been around a while. Terrible. I'm just blanking.
Same wife from the original show?
Well, from the one they canceled just recently.
Oh,
it's a new show. And they canceled it, and they moved it to another network. It's not the old classic show. That was a different one. Anyway, so, they showed them, they're wearing fishing gear. They're like out on a fishing weekend, and they're standing there, and the wife's got a big catch. She's got a big fish, and he's standing next to her with a tiny fish.
With a minnow.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I stopped. I walked back to it. I took a picture of it because I said, why is it that they're always emasculating men on sitcoms? It's like, you know.
It's as old as television.
It is, right?
That's all the husbands have always been idiots. Father Knows Best was, you know, Father Knows Least.
Well, when there wasn't a woman, which was not infrequently too, the only solution was to kill off the mother, right? That was or kill off the father. That was a really, really common thing, at least in my day and age when I was coming up.
Right.
No, none of the when I was a young guy coming up and watching TV, it seemed like everybody was either a widow or a widower.
Hmm, that's possible.
You know, so it had changed a bit, but anyway,
chewing.
That's okay. Peter Riegert's eating New York pizza. He drove 3 hours.
Just
the least
pizza.
He can have is a slice of pizza.
Yeah.
I thought he was leaving me a slice. Now I'm getting hungry. No, it's okay. He's got, I think there may be one more in there. Anyway. But we're getting, getting off track.
So I had all these wonderful actors, and we tried to get distribution, we'd send it to people, and generally the response from those who did independent films or distributed independent films was, well, we really like the movie, but we don't know how to distribute it. And I thought, this is insane. Of course you know how to distribute it. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
But that's what I was getting. And finally, I got so fed up. Somebody, I can't even remember who it is, but he said how much he liked it. But he said, we just don't know how to market it. I said, you got to help me out here. This makes no sense at all to me. I don't know any profession in the world where a challenge is not taken, whether you're a plumber or a surgeon or a dirt bike rider or a racer or anything, or an athlete. Can you imagine an athlete saying, I don't want to play the Yankees because, you know, we don't know how to beat. It makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to this guy, who was very charming, I wish I could remember his name. He said, I really liked it. My wife really liked it. I said, so educate me. What am I missing here? Teach me something. I just don't understand why everybody says they like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, I think they're basically they didn't like it. They're just being polite. And he said, I really did like it. And I said, well, what's the problem? And his answer was very insightful for me. He said, we're lazy. I said, who's lazy? He said, distributors, we're lazy. We want a sure thing. And I said, well, nobody knows what a sure thing is. He said, well, your film cost $400,000. We think, from our point of view, it would take the same amount of money it would take to get your film out and released. We feel we would only make $500,000. So we'd rather spend the same money, energy, and time on a $20 million movie, and we'll make $20 million. And mm-hmm. I said, forgive my arrogance here, but nobody knows which film is going to make $20 million. Isn't that William Goldman's famous mm-hmm. admonition? Mm-hmm. Nobody knows anything. And he said, you're right. You're right. But I work for a company. And then I thought to myself, okay, why don't I do it? I offered all these actors a film.
Sure.
They all took minimum. And, you know, they didn't do me any favors. I don't do favors, and I don't take favors. And I said, you know, here's the part. This is when we're shooting. I'll adjust it to your schedule. And if I'd love to have you do it. And they all did it. Mm-hmm. I didn't call. There's not a one of them I call up for a favor and said, I'm doing my first feature. Would you do this? But I did feel responsible to try and get it in the theaters, because mm-hmm. these are all actors that have starred movies for 40 years.
Yeah.
Eli for God knows how long. So I called up this guy, Danny Laterly, who runs this theater in Lincoln, Nebraska. I said, how'd you like to have the world premiere of the film? And he said, I'll give you 2 weeks. Once I had 2 weeks, then I could start calling other theaters and tell them I'm opening.
Even if it's in some, you know, in Nebraska.
Oh, God.
Didn't matter. Lincoln, Nebraska.
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
A world premiere in New York or a world premiere in Los Angeles, you could world premiere anywhere.
Sure. Well, yeah.
I just wanted to have to be able to say the world premiere is on March 4th.
Right.
And the theater, the movie's going to be there, blah, blah, blah.
Did you enter it into festivals first?
Yes.
Okay.
I got into enough festivals to see that it played.
Did you get press from any of the festivals
not
that it
really,
played in?
Not really.
They don't cover most festivals. They cover a handful of them, you know.
No, it depends. It really depends. I think I went to maybe 6, 7, or 8 film festivals. Mm-hmm. And the festivals were thrilled to have us there. It was
sure.
really great.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You get to hear an audience.
Sure.
Which is invaluable.
Of course. And your film had just the kind of sweet spot of star size.
Right.
That they would go to festivals. That they would, if it works with their schedule, assuming they're not, you know, skip it because it's just
right.
They have some other multi-million-dollar option going on. Like,
well, for a film festival to be able to advertise that cast,
right? It's a great cast,
and you know that's how they attract people.
Of course. Yeah.
And I would go
sure
to represent the film.
Do you remember if it played at Saratoga?
Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking as you mentioned it because. With Eli and mm-hmm. I could see, and Rita, you have mm-hmm. a nice senior cast, and Harris Yulin. I could imagine that would be a draw for that festival.
Did we do Saratoga?
They have a very large senior, but they're very, very involved.
No, I'm wrong. It wasn't Saratoga. Okay.
Was there one in Florida, though? I guess.
No, there
you must
was
have played
one
in Arizona.
Where was the Olympics in New York? Up in New York State. The Olympics from 1980 when the Americans won the hockey game.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I can't remember. Anyway, we were there, and we did Rochester and Buffalo and Chicago, San Francisco, Los Angeles. We were all over the country.
Yeah, I would imagine it would have played really well also in film festivals that happen to be in areas that have retirement communities. And Jewish communities, of course.
Yes, of course. We played.
Did you play some Jewish film festivals?
A couple of Jewish film festivals.
Even though I can imagine with the character being who he was, it might have been. And, you know, there's some...
The range of response is hysterical anyway. But I would say the most fascinating thing was... And the other thing that was fun about doing it was mm-hmm. I gave myself a lesson in distribution.
Sure.
And
yeah,
also that ideas travel. Because this came out in 2000, so that's 18 years ago, before Facebook, before Google, or, you know, all the things that a young person or anybody who can hire young people to do in terms of getting the word out. Mm. Because waiting to do publicity on the week that you show up, it's not as powerful. I mean, it's good enough, but it's not as powerful if you could do advanced prep.
Right, of course. You know? Yeah, get people's heads up. Right.
Yeah, we did 5 weeks in Chicago. We got a like a 3.5 star rating from
Ebert.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was a great review. And the reviews were generally fantastic.
Supportive, if anything, right?
More than supportive. They weren't. They weren't. They weren't. They weren't pitying me. It wasn't like you know, poor schmo.
No, it's a good film. It's. I look at it as a kind of like an amazing accomplishment, actually, for a first time director.
Thank you.
To be honest with you, I mean, I really was. I said, man, there's some weird choices in this, and then I, you know, you realize that's called taking some risks here, you know, which is.
I made the film the way I wanted to make it in the time I had and the money I had.
Right.
You know, that's doing 6 pages a day is that's a lot.
Yeah.
And acting in it, I mean, after the first day, I thought, oh my God, what have I done?
And you only had, I'm sure, some people around for, you know, a day or two, maybe. Like, did you have Eli around? Long?
Eli was around for 4 days. Isabella was around 5 or 6 days.
Oh, well, that's significant.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was able to get Harris done in a day, I think.
Right.
Maybe 2 days. Frank Wood, maybe a day or 2 days.
Frank
Wood. Another great actor.
He was, which one was he?
He was the sidekick to Harris.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, he's a.
Yeah.
You're making a gesture. I think we all know that it's okay to say he was bald. Listen, take a slight break. Finish your pizza because I can also. I want to swap out the battery just so I don't run into a problem.
Good. Go ahead.
It's intermission time, folks. So hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right over to our refreshment center for the most extravagant array of refreshment goodies ever assembled under one roof. Enjoy breathtaking, mouth-watering goodies. Everything from a snack to a delicious full meal. At our refreshment center, you'll find a large variety of goodies to satisfy your hunger, your thirst, or your sweet tooth. So hurry, hurry, hurry. Visit our refreshment center now.
For those listening, you can see. Yeah, we're back on. For those listening, you can actually see you're at the film we're talking about, which is again called King of the Corner on YouTube.
I'm pretty sure you can get it on Netflix. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, you can see it on Netflix. Yeah. Even better. Let's tell people to see it on Netflix.
Either way, yeah.
Because on YouTube, I saw a nice, but they do interrupt it with commercials.
I'd say Netflix definitely.
Yeah. Check out Netflix. I'll put all the links up if anything.
I wanted to call it the original title, which was Bad Jews and Other Stories. But the producer thought it was too provocative, and I think she was dead
wrong.
Why
be your own? Yeah. You'd gotten attention.
The whole point of the story is about what is a good or bad anything, religious-wise. And there's a whole monologue where he says, I'm a bad Jew. Mm-hmm. And he talks about why. And he's in a rough situation, not because he's a bad Jew, but it raises really interesting questions about how connected we are to our community, the sense of wholeness in our life. And look, King of the Corner comes about from a story. As you know, the character tells about a game he played with
his father's eulogy.
Right. And anyway, people make mistakes. And I was too inexperienced to not fight harder.
With it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not inexperienced. I was too. You know, sometimes you lose a battle to win something. So
I understand. Yeah. It was a choice you made, a decision you made. The other person who I just wanted to mention, which I think he. Was probably a very new actor at the time, was Jake Hoffman, who...
Yeah, he was just beginning.
And he's...
He's Dustin's son, and I was looking for, in the screenplay, the character is described as a young Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, it is?
In my screenplay, yeah.
Oh,
the
okay.
reason I did that was because that's how I was categorized. starting out as an actor. Oh, you're a young Dustin Hoffman.
Right.
So I just did as
that's
a,
code.
As, yes, exactly.
It's a lot of
whatever
code in
it
there.
Is, I don't know. But I did it as a giggle for myself. But
yeah,
it's a visual.
You got the young Dustin Hoffman.
And, yes, I did, actually. I got his
son. He did the podcast because he had directed his first feature, and I invited him on because I was kind of curious to pick and
who,
to tell him how when I was a
Jake?
Kid I met his dad. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. What was his first feature?
Now you're putting me on the spot. You know, again, you could relate to it because it was, I think, an ambitious thing, and I think he...
Look, a friend of mine used to say, who was a director and a producer and an artist, a painter named Harry Hurwitz, and he used to say, every time a film is finished, the director should get a standing ovation. Well, everybody should, because it's that hard to get it done, to finish the script, to find the money, to get the release. It's just so difficult. It's amazing anything gets done, let alone anything good.
I know, and I have had on hundreds of directors on this podcast.
Yeah,
I just met Peter Bogdanovich. He did. I think I don't know if I mentioned it to you that I was getting him on the show.
No,
right after we spoke, maybe. Yeah. And I bring it up just to impress you. No, that's why.
I'm impressed
because.
Well, he started out doing this very thing.
Yeah, and he has a book that he wrote or edited or put together because it's interviews, transcriptions of interviews from decades that he had over the years with all these great directors over the years. And I said to him,
I have the book.
Yeah, and it's called Who the Devil Made It, right? And then, and I was like, what I'm doing is a much paler version.
But it's the same.
But it's the same
idea.
Instinct.
Yeah,
it's the same instinct. It's trying to get to something at something in a particular, just a particular type of storyteller.
Well, I don't know if Peter was always planning on being a director, but he was. I think he ran.
You two acted together.
Well,
same
we were
series.
In the same.
Did you have
series.
Any scenes with him?
No. Actually, I auditioned for that part that
he did?
Played.
He's the therapist.
He's the therapist. Mm-hmm. Exactly, but I think that what better way? You know, I don't know. I'd have to ask Peter if he always wanted to be a director. But there's one great way to learn how to be a director, and that's watch them work.
Yeah,
or talk to them and find out.
Was it since we started with that? Was it always an ambition, or did you just sort of
it's a natural thing if you're in the theater to think about writing and directing. It's just a lot of people I think I was always interested in it. I just postponed it because my acting career was going so well, and I always kept thinking I'll get to it before you turn around. 25 years have gone by.
It's also you're creating an opportunity for yourself, right? Because if you're finding that you're not getting the parts that you like, or that there aren't as many parts written around for 50-something-year-old guy or 60-year-old guy.
Look at Orson Welles, Woody Allen, Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton. I mean, it goes on and on. And now it's more, women who are doing it.
Right.
That's probably the smart way to go.
Right.
Because you're at the mercy of somebody else thinking of you as an actor. And unless you're an enormous star, and there's only 10 or 15 of those at any one time, you're probably better off developing your own material. It's not that easy to do, but there's plenty of examples of it.
How do you feel like you in the star, in that constellation of actors? I mean, do you feel like, did it... surprise? How did you feel like in the early 80s? Well, you all of a sudden were this enormous leading, all of a sudden you were a star, and then you were also a leading man because you became a star. I guess Animal House was this one
Animal
of the biggest
House
films.
That was 78.
Anybody who came out of the film had an opportunity at that point, right? Just about.
Well, once you have that much attention and your name and your face get joined together. That's the goal. Because then people can visualize who you are.
Right.
And of course, over time, they always confuse you with somebody else. Unless you keep every maybe
it's what they call branding now.
Well, it's yes, I mean, it's a terrible word, but that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, right.
But you need something in to succeed in the public eye every year and a half to 3 years.
Uh-huh.
3 years at least. Because it's not that the public has no memory. It's they've moved on to the next person.
Right.
You know, you know, a movie star is probably making at least two movies a year. One at least.
Sure.
But if you think, you know, when I did Local Hero, Burt Lancaster was 69 and he'd already made 89, 85 films. And he was, you know,
and
that,
he,
that's
he was
what,
probably
that's
not
the,
working as much as other contemporaries in that regard.
Possibly.
Because they
possible.
Would they potentially make.
Well, in the beginning, even in the silent era, 20s, 30s, 40s,
wow.
up into the 50s, a starring actor, leading actor, was doing three films, four films, five films.
At least.
You know, they didn't take 3 months to shoot.
Right.
I believe, what's the famous film, It Happened One Night, that won all the Academy Awards with Frank Capra? I think they shot it in 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at it, it's basically a theater
train.
Set.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's a scene on the bus. There's a scene in the cabin. There's this blah blah. But you could do four or five films a year,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and you wanted to. I mean,
sure,
it was fun.
Right, and there wasn't some sort of other expectation like that. Less is more creates more of a some sort of mystique or something. It was just like you.
Well, the stars back then.
You were making money for the studio, and so you.
Yeah, but they were always fighting with the bosses mm-hmm. because most of the material is not very
direct.
Good.
Yeah. They're not all one, It Happened One Night.
No.
And
hardly.
Not all your directors were George Cukor or...
That was Frank Capra.
Frank's Capra or, you know, Ernst
but
Lubitsch.
But there's Michael Caine told... I worked on a movie with Michael Caine called The Shock to the System, which was great fun. And he used to say... to me, I know my reputation that I work too much, but he always felt it takes five films to get one good one. And he liked working. He said, I'm a Cockney from London, and I never think that I'm working again.
That's his rationale. Whatever.
Well,
it works for him.
Makes
it works
sense.
For him.
It's
no, it
truth.
Does, but not everybody succumbs to that. That
trust
format.
Me.
But he had
working,
a reputation there for a while there of sort of...
Doing too much.
Yeah, not being discriminating enough. But that's okay.
It's his call.
That's right.
You know, it
that's
doesn't
right.
matter.
I'm not criticizing.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I can't remember.
You said, trust me. Okay.
I don't remember.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Okay, Americathon, which I don't know if anybody out there, many people have seen at this stage, but it is a very, very, very singularly memorable film now.
It's got.
I didn't know about
it. It was a good idea. I don't think it was particularly well executed. It had... so many interesting cameos in it.
Right, it did.
But,
and the voice of George Carlin.
Yeah, yeah, it was loaded with people. I would say I made a mistake in terms of how I played the character. I think he was too passive. He mm-hmm. should have been much more hostile.
I see.
But that's how you learn.
Yeah,
just
sure.
Learn.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. funny. I didn't know about it, and I know a lot of obscure films.
Right.
But I didn't know about that one, and so when I saw it, I was like, "Wow, how did I not hear about this film before?"
Because it came and went.
Came and went.
And made
did
no
you
impression.
That, did you make that? Even it came out right on top of Animal House, more or less. Did you make it after Animal House?
I did. Oh yeah, sure.
Okay.
I think Animal House came out in July of 78. This. I might have done this 3 months
79.
Later.
Mm-hmm.
This movie came
right.
out in 79.
Did they
Americathon.
Did they shoot it in the States or was it done in
Canada? Oh, yeah, California.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh, I guess it takes place in like the White House is in California or something.
Yeah.
You know who came off real well in that? Yourself.
Well, you
Harvey Korman. I
Harvey's
thought he was
hysterical.
So funny in that.
Oh, he's so
he
funny.
Really sells it.
Yeah.
He's supposed to. That's the role he's in.
Yeah.
But he also goes above. He's so committed, and he is funny.
Oh yeah.
What was he like?
He was Harvey Korman. He was.
I mean,
he was great fun to be with. Very simpatico.
Oh, okay.
What a very warm, generous guy. We had a lot of laughs. He was a lot of fun.
He was because you know.
Yeah. I loved him on
Carol
on everything.
Yeah.
But obviously Carol Burnett, but But, you know, it's not every day you get a chance to work with people like that. And he was, God, he was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really, I got some good laughs at that.
The premise was fun. The America was in debt. And who were they in debt to? They were in debt to an American Indian played by Chief Dan George, who was the American Indian in Little Big Man. He was the chief. And he calls in his marker. And this was around the time when gas was really expensive,
right.
relative.
The final days and, of Carter. Yep, the Carter
getting, administration. You know, getting a loan. Loans were like 17, 18, 19%. It was an insane time. And there was no more gas, and everybody lived in their car, and they wore gym clothes, track clothes. No suits or anything like that. It was, and it
well,
was,
people were wearing that actually at that time.
That's what it was based on. It was,
yeah, yeah, it's funny. Know, yeah. Right. Well,
it was a sketch by the Fireside Theater.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. They're brilliant. Yeah. You're right. This conceit is right on. And it also, by the way, I should say thematically, stands up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if you watch it now, you can certainly see themes that are very pertinent right now. I mean, you know, in terms of the government, the having some face in office, somebody who's a bit vapid, played by John Ritter.
John Ritter was the president. He was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, he played a kind of a variation of the persona he already created on his own sitcom.
Well, they were all the characters.
Oh, my God. Was that politically incorrect, that film, though? Holy crap. Oh, my God. It was
1979. Almost every film I made was politically incorrect.
I mean, no, well, not Local Hero.
Animal House.
Animal House. Right. Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah. And reviewing
that. We offended everybody we could.
Yeah. Successfully, apparently.
I think so.
Yeah. It was fun to revisit some of these things after some time, you know, a lot of fun actually. And I hadn't seen Local Hero. I have to say though, that I may have mentioned this to you on the phone, and that is that I did, it's like one of those movies. I just sat with Richard E. Grant, the British actor, South African by birth, I guess. But he was in a movie in 87 called With Nail and I, I'm sure you know.
Oh yeah, sure.
It was classic. And it's like one of those movies like Local Hero was in the 80s, where as a kid, meek becoming a young adult, 20 years old, whatever, When Local Hero came out in 83, I think.
83, right.
That's right, February, when I hit, about, I was about 19 or so.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was discovering these things apart from my parents.
Right.
Who, you know, introduced me to a lot of films. But now I was out there kind of figuring, and I went to see that at least twice in the movie theaters.
Were you interested in directing or writing or anything like that? Or
I don't, well, I was in the theater group at high school. There was a real concentration in my so much so that we were actually reading Respect for Acting. Well, we did that too, but we were reading like, you know, when we were reading about the Stanislavski method, my theater teacher was kind of serious about, well, you know, at least teaching us about the method. We didn't necessarily, we weren't like 17-year-old method actors.
Talk about branding. The method.
Yeah.
Is a method. There's lots of methods.
Not the method.
No, but they were. It's a brilliant self.
Right.
A brilliant way to brand yourself.
Yeah.
What's your? No, we have. This is the method.
Right.
Here's the finger.
Well, you already sort of described that you were more about the script and the text
Being a Jew,
that makes sense.
But everybody is. You have to be about the text if you're going to be an actor. It's just the particular approach. I mean, I would lose something by not studying acting and apprentice myself to the profession, and I would gain something by not studying acting. You gain and lose on every choice you make, so that was mine.
Right.
But when you're working with another actor, your thoughts about method or strategy, you're literally working off of another actor.
Yeah.
If they're busy doing their teacher's philosophy, then they're not in the scene.
Yeah, they're not there. They're not present.
No.
And I know that was a point of contention probably with a lot of people that work with such serious method actors, and you know, directors have talked about it being very challenging to work with the Montgomery Cliffs of the world and the Marlon Brandos of the world.
I'm sure it is, but I'm not so sure it's for the reasons that are thought of, that you know, you not every actor is not every actor is difficult because they study with a particular discipline. It's a very interesting phenomena to be make yourself or allow yourself to become part of a group, and
that's another theater group. Sorry, go ahead.
And mm-hmm. you know, the director is responsible, especially in movies and theater. Amazingly, in television, the directors have no power. Mm-hmm. It's all the writer producers mm-hmm. who have the
that's
power.
Right. Yeah.
So, how do you put the team together to get the best result? And no, I wouldn't say actors are difficult because of where they studied. It's probably more related to their personality, I guess.
Well, their personality could be the reason why they're kind of choosing to, you know, spend a lot of time internalizing, you know, and maybe to the degree where you're...
You know, and it would have to be specific.
I don't know why we're getting so getting so caught up, and I don't mean to. I just know that you mentioned that. And Eli Wallach comes from that, right? But when he was in his 80s, and I do have an Eli Wallach story too, because about the time he called me, I know you cold called him to be on the cast.
No, he did. I asked him to read.
Oh, to read it?
I did a reading.
Okay. He plays your dad in the film.
Yeah. And I got about 17 actors together. We did a reading at a theater. I can't remember where it was. And maybe an audience of 50 people. Uh-huh. And actually, Eli, who else was there? Harris, Dominic Chianese. Mm-hmm.
The Altacockers.
The Cockers, yeah. Beverly D'Angelo, I believe.
Oh, right. She's in,
or maybe
she's...
it was Rita. No, it was Beverly D'Angelo. Uh-huh. And there was one other person. I can't remember. Anyway, the five of them came up to me after the reading and said, look, if this ever becomes something, they really would be interested.
Wow.
So once I heard that, that gave me even more confidence that this is material that would work.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's that kind of a thing. It's that. That's how it's puzzle solving, essentially.
Yeah,
it's a really interesting puzzle to solve.
Well, I come up with great ideas. My execution is a problem for me. But like you, you did it. But at one point I'll make this really brief because you're only here for a brief amount of time. But I had this idea of takes place in the 50s when an actor can't get any. He was a leading man at one point, but he's so difficult he can't get any other work except for a Western they're shooting in Spain, and at a duress he has to take it, and he goes, and it, you know, he's an asshole, he's a jerk, and he's alienated everybody, and he goes to shoot the script in Spain, and, you know, he's humiliated that he has to stoop to this level of shooting a cheap Western by some guy who doesn't even speak English. And he gets there, and nobody speaks English, and he doesn't have any, you know, the amenities he's used to. And, of course, he just falls in love with his experience. It's not unlike, in a way, Local Hero story in that way, you know, now that I think about it. Maybe I stole this. You know? Well, but the point is, it's called Spaghetti. And I wrote this treatment, and I sent it. And at that time, it coincidentally, Eli Wallach, who was the ugly, as you know,
right,
had just written his memoir. Remember, this was right
probably
around,
and me.
Yeah, which probably was right around the time you made your film, now that I think about it. And I sent him my this in the mail to his publisher, because I didn't have it. Again, like you said, Facebook, and well, he's not going to be on Facebook, but it wasn't so easy to find everybody like it is now. And so I sent it to the publisher, and a couple weeks later, I'm upstate in the Finger Lakes, and I get a phone call, and it's, hello, Adam. And it's Eli Wallach calling me.
Hey, he smelled a job. Seriously.
Well, you know, and he just wants to say, I think it's a great idea. Do you want? And I said, and he said, do you want some of my time? I can call you at work. He called me, and he spent, like, a few days later, an hour on the phone with me talking about life on the set of the Spaghetti Western, so I could kind of write, you know. Can you imagine that?
I can, because Eli loves what he does, and he loves the people who do what he does and loves, and makes perfect sense to me. When I gave him when I called him and said, I've got the money, he said, who am I, the old Jew? I said, well, the young Jew has been cast.
Yeah.
He said, you know, I'm an actor, I can stretch. I said, well, you're not going to stretch for this part because I'm going to play it. But he's, yes, that makes perfect sense to me that he would do that for you.
That was amazing. What was a little disconcerting is like the next day he called again, not remembering that he called the day before, but he was 88 or something. Yeah. Can't.
And he was older than that, I'm sure.
He might have been.
Yeah, he was 88 when he did my film.
Okay. So it was only, yeah, and he died at
like 10 years later.
Yeah, yeah. So you're right. He was probably 90, I'm sure. So.
Yeah, oh, easily. He told me when we were working.
Yeah, 10 years.
He said, I think I got 10 more years.
Yeah, wow.
I said, really? How do you know that? He said, I don't know. I think that's what I think. And he had another 10 years.
If you say it.
it will be.
It will be.
If only.
Just to get back to Local Hero again, then, if you don't mind. I don't know. I always say this. I apologize ahead of time for dwelling on past things because, of course, I don't know how much people like to. I do relevant work now. You know, that's what I would think.
No. I'm here to, you know, okay. Doesn't bother me.
All right.
If I could talk about my recent 10 films in the last few years, believe me, I'd be talking about them.
And I would. But no, you're doing a lot of TV, though. You're doing.
You know, if the impression people have is that I work a lot, then that's a good impression.
My father used to work a lot.
He worked 50 weeks a year.
Yeah.
A busy actor, maybe 26 weeks a year. That's not a lot. But it's always challenging to find work. And it's rare to find security as an actor.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're in a successful soap opera. Or if you're in a television series, that's about as secure as you can get. Or a very long run in the theater. But those are exhausting. Eight shows a week is, oh my God.
And don't compare less than 1% of actors who make so much money off of being a superstar. That's very rare. Yeah, that's the, not just an exception. Yeah. That's
Actually, it's an interesting phenomena. If you have two or three surprisingly successful monetary experiences, whether
three
it's
a series
or a big salary for a film for whatever reason, whatever those two or three things are, if you're smart, you'll figure out a way to where to put your money, because it's not going to be that. It's very rare that
that
happens.
Did you know that back in the 80s and early 90s?
Well, I didn't make any money to even consider that. But I made enough so that by 1990, there was enough money there that my lawyer said, you've got to do something with this. And I don't mean $1 million, maybe $100,000, which is a lot of money. But he said you have to figure out what to do here. Right. Uh-huh. You're not planning for your future. So, you know, I created a 401k and all those things that you have to do. Mm-hmm. And I bought an apartment in the city. And, you know, you learn how to do it.
Yeah.
It's just most people think if I recognize you, you're rich.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... couldn't be further from the truth.
Right. Yeah. And
I mean, I learned about real estate through an actor friend of mine named Bob Fields. And he actually owned maybe 9 apartments in New York City. And when he would have a rough period, he would sell an apartment.
Right.
So he taught me about real estate.
Yeah.
And well, that was interesting.
Incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but there are people who know how to do it. It's an absolutely fascinating skill set. I'm okay, but boy, it's fascinating. Yeah. Tim Matheson, when I met Tim, he'd been, you know, when we did Animal House, he'd been working since he was a kid actor, and somebody taught him where to put his money, and he had some beautiful home in L.A. I mean, it was almost like a compound.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very smart that way, very knowledgeable.
Yeah.
Bruce McGill from Animal House also, he was very smart about money. He taught himself the market, how to play the market, which was really interesting.
The one who he was, the one with the motorcycles.
Yeah,
right?
D-Day, yeah.
D-Day, rather, yeah.
Yeah.
The one with the motorcycles. I know you were Boone.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Occasionally, I have to be the devil's advocate, too.
Sure.
I'm going to have to ask, we talked about Eli Wallach, and... And then Burt Lancaster.
Actor. Yeah, Burt Lancaster, yeah.
You had obviously a number of scenes with him. I mean, he's only in But did he work for, like, on that film a couple of days, too?
No, he worked 3 weeks.
Oh, he did?
A week in Houston and 2 weeks in Scotland. Well, it's never how many days you work. It's not the size of the part. It's the impact of the part. I mean, nowadays actors are paid so much money, I would suspect they want the actor in every scene. Mm-hmm. But if you look at movies from the 30s and 40s, an actor doesn't have to be in every scene.
There's this thing, though. It's sort of a hat trick, in a way. Like, you cast the movie, and then you bring in one old star from the past. I don't know if it's a kind of a demographic choice to try to bring in an older crowd.
Even today,
but it was obviously even in the 80s.
I don't think they think that way at all. I think they think old people are just, you know, shaking in their shoes. They don't. No, it's only if the writer writes the part. They mm-hmm. don't hire it. They don't. It's not a.
It seemed like when they would write that part in that story.
Which one?
Any. Or let's say Local Hero, for instance. There's a part for somebody. Here's an opportunity to bring in a...
It wasn't for that reason. Mm-hmm. It was because the writer thought mm-hmm. he heard Burt Lancaster's voice as Happer, as the guy who was the richest man on the planet. No, he wouldn't. It wasn't done for that reason. And also, it really wasn't a Burt Lancaster movie.
No,
you know, in terms
of
Peter
Ringert film, actually.
No. But I mean, if whoever loves Burt Lancaster isn't necessarily going to find that movie. Although he did an awful lot of interesting movies the last 10 years. That he
did
was working.
Atlantic City, et cetera.
Oh yeah, God yeah.
And I could never. Well, who was the character who had it was gunning for him the whole time? This guy that was working at the office, and he's the one that was putting the sign out on the skyscraper window and taunting
his therapist.
That was his therapist?
Yes.
Oh, he hired somebody to torment him.
Yes.
I see.
I couldn't figure that out. I can't remember the exact term, but it was like a
gestalt.
Hysteria or hostility trainer or something like that. I don't know. Yes. Happer is a mother.
But how was he?
He's great. I loved working with him. He's one of the earliest names I remember from being a kid. Mm-hmm. When we first got a television, I think in 1951, 1953, in there, my memory was it was a variety show, and there was I think it was Sammy Davis Jr. Doing impressions of Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas arguing with each other.
That's
my
great,
parents were hysterical, and I went, why is that funny? And they said, well, these are two famous movie stars, and he told me Burt Lancaster.
He was a great mimic. I didn't realize that until recently just how, I mean, we knew what a
Sammy
great singer, what an outstanding singer and dancer Sammy Davis was, but he was also doing impressions. It was very controversial because he was a black guy doing white people. At the time, that was very, very controversial.
His
father and his uncle.
Remind me of that? I don't remember
His father and his uncle.
They had an act.
The first time when he would start doing it, he was still a relatively young guy, and he was still very close to his family act. And they said, you do that again, we're going to beat the crap out of you because you're putting yourself in danger. There's a documentary Sam Pollard, this documentary filmmaker, made called I Am What I Am. What's the name of the song?
I don't know.
And it's Sammy Davis.
Right.
Fantastic. Fantastic documentary. Anyway, I'm just letting you know about it. Well, how are you doing on time? Just give me a hard out. Okay.
My watch clicked.
Okay. Wow. Oh, did Mark Knopfler ever come? That's a stupid question, but
He might have been on the set briefly, mm-hmm. When we did the Kaylee scene, the dance.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was there for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I could be wrong.
What a great soundtrack, because that
was... Oh, my God, fantastic.
That was like a... I remember when that came out at that same time also, it was like everybody was listening to, had the soundtrack on a, you know, they would record off the vinyl, like myself, onto a cassette and bring it to camp and just listen to the, put it on my phone again.
Beautiful soundtrack.
People should check it out.
Yeah. We'll
maybe play it a little bit of it later on the podcast.
Sure.
I'm just bringing stuff up also to see if you have any particular, you know, reaction to it. I had an idea. Maybe I won't keep this on the podcast, but I really think this is a great idea. And now in the day where you have to come up with this as you mentioned before,
right.
How lazy and at risk-taking distributors are and such.
Right, right.
I think they'll go for this idea. What do you think of a sequel to Local Hero? Here's my thought, okay? I've thought it all through. McIntyre is nearing retirement. He's kind of getting up there, and he's heard that his friend has passed away, that he hasn't seen in like close to 40 years, right? He what was the character's name? Played by
Dennis Lawson played the Urquhart.
Urquhart, of yeah. course. How could I forget that?
Yeah.
Urquhart, or he's just gravely ill. I haven't
right.
figured that out yet.
Yeah.
Maybe he's still because what's his name is still alive. Capaldi.
Peter, yeah.
Peter Capaldi is alive.
He just finished playing Doctor
Who. He's huge,
Who.
Doctor Who. He's a yeah. huge star. Can get yeah. Capaldi in it, too. Or maybe it should be the owner of the... But you weren't so close to him. The owner of the inn that you stayed at.
That was Dennis Lawson.
Oh, that was Dennis Lawson, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe because you guys bonded. You did bond with him over the scotch.
Oh, God, yeah, sure.
So maybe that's the character that... Or I'm trying to figure out
well,
who... Because you had also...
You'll have to write Bill Forsyth and see if he wants to do something like that.
Yeah, Bill Forsyth is still around too. Yeah. It's a great idea. No, but you're no longer in Houston. See, now you've moved up, and you're working just in finance. It's a business where nothing is bought and sold, right? We know that that's something that's like it's empty. You know
it is a wonderful idea because going back to one's past is very tempting. To do,
I know.
But it would be very interesting to see in any story to go back, especially that one.
Out of all your work, I'd say that has the most. Just has the sort of the capacity for telling another chapter to that story.
It's far fetched.
No. I think we should write this out. I think this is a great.
I'm working project. On my own stuff.
All right, so if I write it, I'll take a.
But before you do it, you gotta if you don't get permission from Warner
I know,
Brothers,
it's a
waste,
big
Bill,
waste of time, right?
Yeah.
Well, you'll have to put me in touch. I'll write up something and I'll send it to him. I'll say we have Peter's interest.
Yeah. Please,
Peter Capaldi. I'm sure we can get him.
Yeah.
No, but it's just on the idea, the hypothetical I'm just talking about. I just thought, I bet people really love, and you get that nostalgic. All those guys like my age that were my age in 1983 when this film came out and who went to see it over and over, and it was become a major
it's a very,
underground kind of, like a cult film for a lot of people.
Yeah, but it's very rare that a film... for lack of a better word, a sequel. It wouldn't exactly be a sequel, but it's obviously, it's never an easy thing to do, especially for
right.
something that's so loved by the audience.
Sure. Well, you don't want to screw it up. That's
my
point. For one thing. For
one
sure.
of the benefits of Animal House, and this is absurd. It's not a benefit.
Well, they screwed that up.
I wish Belushi was still alive.
I know.
But once he was gone, there was no way they could do it. They tried.
Oh, they did?
Oh, sure.
I know.
Anything
they
that
did,
makes that much money.
Every network
they want
did a TV series based on it.
They did, but it wasn't, they didn't have John, they didn't have me, they didn't have Tim.
Right.
And it's not easy to repeat. It's only in the modern era that people have been that successful.
It's true.
What are there, 9 Star Wars? It's unbelievable. But anything that makes that much money, they have to make sequels.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy not to,
right? Yeah.
If
this would be obviously almost like a
if Animal House were made today, and it did the money that it did, within 3 months they'd have the next. They'd already be on to the next one. There were 6 Porkies, for God's sakes. I mean,
yeah,
that's
very true.
People
and Animal House begat Porkies, and it begat all those.
Well,
what they call that kind of comedy? The
successful.
That well said. Yeah. All right. We might have to do a part 2 at some point.
I don't want to.
But that was great.
Yeah. Can we do this over the phone as well?
Sure.
Because if you want to do more, I'll be happy to talk to you.
Yeah, this
more
is
on
great
the phone.
For this is terrific part when we talked. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great stuff that.
Because if you start putting this together and you have other stuff you want me to do, let me know and I'll do it over the phone.
Yeah, no, I think this is a what we have is great.
Okay,
I mean, I think this is a great stands on itself. I mean, especially a lot of your experiences you shared earlier on about when you directed King of the Corner.
Right,
I think that's really invaluable stuff. And
it's fun to talk about. I'm happy to do it. And
we did get to the majority of the stuff I didn't ask you about. A few people, but that's so fine. I talked to you almost about everybody.
But like I said, if there's anything specific you want to do, I'll set aside some time and we'll.
Great.
Modern times. I want to take a picture of this thing. This is really cool.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I want to get also, it would be great to get a picture while we're sitting here, too. I'll give you all the models of everything here. It's so easy and portable.
Mr. McIntyre in Scotland. Mr. Happer, should I transfer him to Mr. Fountain?
No, let me have him.
Yes, sir.
Happy here, McIntyre.
I'm watching the sky, sir. It's doing some amazing things. It's got everything. Reds, greens, kind of shimmering, and it's got a noise, too, like a far-off thunder, only it's softer. I wish you could see it. I wish I could describe it to you just like I'm seeing it.
Be more specific, McIntyre. You're my eyes and ears there. Give me details.
Sir! I'll give you the colors first, sir. It's white and green and red. I'm sorry, that's the phone box. Oh, it's blue. It just blew. It's like a shower of color.
Tell him it's the Aurora Borealis.
I have some more information, sir. It's the Aurora Borealis.
But it's beautiful.
Ah, you're a lucky man, McIntyre. I haven't seen the Aurora since 53 in Alaska.
I haven't seen a comet yet, sir. I don't know if I'd spot one and all this other stuff.
Morris, you idiot!
Ben was saying that meteors are always a good sign of a comet. And that stuff we saw coming from Leo the other night may just be an indication of what might be happening in the future. With regards to comets, of course. I will probably just keep...
Morris, you idiot! Get off this building! I'll have you certified!
And as you suggested, I'll watch Virgo as well. And I'll let you know if anything... God, it just went red all over! It's red all over!
Mrs. Wyatt, I'm leaving the office.
Yes, sir.
And Mrs. Wyatt, there's a maniac outside the building. You better call the police department. Get some marksmen. Shoot them off. Shoot to kill.